At Beerham Baum & Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerham Baum & Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
and online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Match No Match, starring Cynthia Hyatt. Managing emotions, that's what we're talking about. And I know the listeners are going to get a lot out of this. In fact, you should probably replay this broadcast over and over because there's so much to it. And, of course, breakradioshow.com or probably your website too.
Yes, you can go to my website and it has you go to the link that says radio and lecture. Hmm. And it'll take you, just hit the little
button.
Yeah, the little button, and it takes you right to, back to, I think, your site where they're all podcasted.
That is so cool because this is so valuable. And, you know, people are going around, you probably hear it all the time, I see it in restaurants. You just listen to people and they're complaining about their spouse, their boyfriend, their girlfriend, their kids, their boss, their colleagues, on and on. Maybe it's time to stop the complaints, embrace the feelings, and see how life changes. Comment on that.
Well, I think that is a very good comment, and the thing that you want to remember is it's the willingness to embrace your own feeling means you have to take responsibility for it, means you have to own it.
Oh, yeah.
And that goes back to pain, and we don't want to feel pain. And so what we know about humans is they constantly are resisting pain and increasing pleasure. So they avoid pain, increase pleasure. And instead of realizing that when I avoid the pain of that emotion and I hurry and I increase my pleasure by distracting myself and denying that feeling by indulging in some maybe a substance or, you know, unproductive behavior, I'm just creating more pain for myself.
It's like a Band-Aid on a broken bone.
Right.
That's just not going
to
work.
It's not. And so what's imperative is that, you know, people certainly need to embrace their feeling, take responsibility for it, feel it, manage it. And then we don't pass it around because a lot of individuals want to give you their feeling so that you can manage it.
Yeah, that's yes. right. Is that called blaming?
Well, it's called a lot of different things. Some of it's codependency. Some of it is, you know, projection. Some of it is taking my feeling out on you.
Victim mentality? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Helplessness? Mm-hmm. Hopelessness?
Entitlement, all those. Immaturity.
Oh, entitlement, yeah. what is it, Gen X,
right.
Generation
So it's like
X?
If I'm having a negative feeling, it's your fault. Or if I'm having a negative feeling, if you really loved me, you would fix it.
That's a bad, that's not a, I shouldn't say bad, that's an ineffective starting place to come from.
It's very dysfunctional and very injurious. And it's not going to produce anything it's not going to solve any problems. Because inevitably, the person that's having the feeling is the one that needs to solve it. Now, it doesn't mean I don't help somebody with their feeling by supporting them, and we're going to talk about that as well.
You know what popped in my mind? You probably don't want to know, but I'm going to say. No, it's random, I know. But when you said this, here's the question I have. Is like, you know, when people pass their feelings off on others and not take responsibility and they want the other person to fix it, do the movies in Hollywood contribute to this whole scenario because of the fantasy and it doesn't, it just seems fantasy.
Well, absolutely. One of the ways that Hollywood and our culture contributes to that is to make people think that if they change their external world, then they will feel better.
Yeah, that's
and so
well said.
So
that's what I was thinking.
It does it temporarily, but truly, if I want my external world to be better, if I manage my internal world, then my internal world is better. My external world doesn't matter as much. Because if I'm trying to get all of my feelings fixed by people, places, and things, then what's going to happen is that I'm never going to learn from the feelings that I'm having.
And think how damaging this is. I'm going to take a shot at this one. Is that the man, the woman, whoever uses these movies as a standard in which to make decisions, how damaging is that? They'll say, well, why can't you be like someone on the big screen? And they go out and try to find someone that externally, it'll never work.
That's right.
Never work, right?
Because then it means that I'm never in touch with who I am. And if I'm not in touch with who I am, I can't enjoy who you are. And if I'm not in touch with who I am, then I can't have deep intimacy, which means I am not going to have any of the fulfillment in the relationship that I'm really longing for.
Wow. I like movies, but don't take that part of the movie
well,
as
they're
gospel.
They're just movies. Right? That's what I say to people.
Exactly.
They're just movies. They're fantasies. That's the whole point
of them.
They
really are, yeah.
They're entertainment.
Otherwise, why?
It's not possible.
Yeah.
It's not possible. Because the movies that are possible, nobody really wants to see.
Yeah. Like which ones?
Well, they don't make them, Dave. Unless they're educational films.
There was one good one I remember once. Let's see, what was it?
I mean, there are several movies that are meaningful.
Like Same Time Next Year. Ever see that?
Mm-mm, I haven't.
Oh, Alan Alda. Tom? Mm-hmm. Okay, no. All right, I'm dating myself. Now, let's go to emotions, you know, and how they're different than thoughts.
Well, and I think that's imperative to distinguish. Because many people want to just think they're having a feeling, like think that they're working on their feeling. And so they just want to think about the feeling. They don't want to actually feel the feeling.
Oh, so that's a good distinction. So thinking about the feeling is not the same as embracing the feeling.
That's right.
And so,
how see,
would
we
you
all
know?
Want to stay in our head, because if I stay in my head, then that's not a feeling place. Thoughts are not feelings. Thoughts are generated by my mind. Feelings are generated by my subconscious, my psyche, my unconscious realm, my identity.
So you're saying that if it's an analytical process, then maybe you're thinking about
it. Right. I mean, it doesn't mean I don't need to think about my feelings. But if I don't feel my feelings, I just keep thinking about them. And they generally are going to get to become more negative thoughts.
So how would you go about recognizing you're thinking it and then moving from thinking to feeling it? Is there a process?
That's part of it. I need to express it. One of the ways I feel the feelings, I'm expressing it. And so if I'm feeling the feeling, I'm either going to talk to somebody about it to release it and get some resolution. I'm going to journal about it. I'm going to go and I'm going to meditate. I'm going to pray. I'm going to, if it's an angry feeling, I'm going to do something to express it. I'm going to go, you know, take a hammer to a 2x4. Whatever I'm going to do. I'm going to go run around the block, exert some emotional, you know, some physical energy.
So
but
that
the
helps.
But the main thing to remember with thoughts and feelings are energy. And they are created by hormones and different chemicals. And thoughts are electrical. That's the neurotransmitters in your brain.
Oh, that's a good way to look at it. So thoughts are electrical.
Right.
And feelings are chemical.
Chemical, yes.
Wow. Nicely said. Never heard of it that way.
That's the first time I said it that way.
Really?
Yes.
Live here on KXXT 1010, Breakthrough Thinking.
There we go.
All right. So that's a nice way of putting it.
I mean, it's a very big oversimplification. So any, like, neuroscientist and chemist would be like, okay, whatever, she missed the point. But for all of us, that's the easiest way to really simplify it enough so that we make the distinction.
That is very good. I like that. Now, so those are the distinctions, emotions from thought. So you want to manage. Well, let me ask you, do you manage your emotions as well as your thoughts?
Mm-hmm.
You do both.
Well, and we're going to talk about that. That's part of this way that feelings and actions occur. And so one of the things that the reason we differentiate between our thoughts and our feelings is, like we said originally, I can't choose my feelings, but I can choose my thoughts.
Mm.
See, my thoughts produce feelings. And so the way I think has a great deal to do with what I feel, how long I feel it, how big I feel it. And so now that doesn't mean that every thought produces a feeling. There are many feelings that occur and then I think about them. But when we're dealing with our own internal realm and we're dealing with an outside event, then what happens is I've got this outside event that occurs. It goes through the filtering that we were going to talk about, and it hits a belief system that I have. As soon as it goes through a belief system, thoughts are produced, then I get a feeling, and then after a feeling, I'm compelled to act.
So you're saying maybe if you change your beliefs, then mm-hmm. it will change the filter, which will also change the thought, which will change the feeling.
Right.
Near and dear to my heart, that's NLP.
Right. Yes. Oh,
I love it. Yeah.
Yes.
No, that makes sense.
And so that core beliefs are going to be, that has a lot to do with what goes on in my internal world. And core beliefs are generally a statement that you might hear inside yourself that is a big generalization. So I'm a loser. I am unlovable. I will never succeed. You know, I am whatever this a general belief, or the world is a scary place, or, you know, the world is a very bad place.
All men are this way. All women are this way.
Because what that does is then that creates a whole bunch of thinking processes and paradigms that come out of that core belief.
And it also produces what I would call a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right, because then, see, I have feelings which are energy, chemical energy, that are going to produce actions. And those, and that's where we went to when we talked about this before, that famous proverb, 23:7, for as a man thinketh within, so he is.
Yeah.
And so the way I think produces who I am and what is happening in my reality.
So another way to manage feelings mm-hmm. would be to understand the filters
mm-hmm.
and to be able to really recognize, identify maybe limiting beliefs that are holding you back and see if you can transform them into empowering beliefs.
Well, this is what our show was on last month, and that was reality and truth. That we want, here's my reality, and I want my reality to be based in truth. And so I have to determine what the truth is. Now, for Christians, that's going to be a Christian paradigm. We're going to take that truth from God. We're going to take biblical truth and say, is my reality, my feelings, my thoughts lining up with truth? Because that's where I want to get them. I want to get them to be in truth. Because that's the place that we know when then you'll know the truth and the truth will set you free. So the more truth I have, the more I'm living in truth, the freer I am. That doesn't mean it protects me from pain, but I manage pain much differently. And my relationships are much deeper, much healthier. They actually are resilient and they actually empower people. And so instead of the relationship taking and everybody's having to deal with that person in their life, that person actually increases the goodness in their life and supports it and makes it better.
And the truth is different than, you know, like if you're a detective just getting the facts. I mean, you're talking about a universal truth. I mean,
the
one
absolute,
truth,
absolute
that
truth.
Which does not change.
That's right. So facts can, you know, facts are facts. I mean, the fact is I can be having a very negative feeling. That's a fact. But is the feeling actually coming from thoughts that are based in truth? So, and I think I gave the example of if I have an anorexic in my office, she feels fat. She believes she's fat. That's not true.
Gotcha.
If she doesn't get herself lined up with the truth that she is, that is not true, she's going to die. So those thoughts and feelings and core beliefs are going to create death for her.
So would one? So could we talk? I mean, one thing we could talk about then is truth concepts, or mm-hmm. maybe what the truths are,
right?
And that comes from the Bible?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're really saying.
Right. There are universal principles that we know that are general truths that work. And so what I usually do with clients, though, is I will say to them, I want you to pick five, like what you would consider a reference point. And a lot of people pick Bible verses that get them back in line. And so like a reference point for me is Jeremiah 29:11 says, you know, for I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper you, not to harm you, for a hope, for a future, for good, not for evil. And so when life isn't working out very well, or even if I'm messing up my own life, I can remind myself, because I can be way out away from the truth, thinking things like, oh, this isn't going to work out, it's not going to be okay, you know, whatever it is that I'm thinking. And that truth pulls me back into, wait, what am I going to believe? What is my core belief? So that I can get my thoughts lined up with that core belief.
That makes so much sense. And so this is so critical. And I'm suspecting this is what you do in therapy, too, is to get connected to core beliefs.
Yes, because those core beliefs generate those thoughts, and those thoughts generate feelings, and the feelings generate an action. So when I'm trying to help people change their actions, absolutely I want people to change their actions. But what I say to them is, you're not going to be able to pull it off forever if you don't change the core belief that a lot of that action is coming, where that action is coming from, like the anorexic. If I don't get that core belief changed, I can put a feeding tube down her nose, but it doesn't mean that she's going to keep weight on as soon as she gets out of the hospital.
So that's interesting. What I wrote down, what popped in my mind again, is if you have a core belief, like money buys happiness,
yes.
Money leads to security.
Yes. Or the famous one for Americans, I'm only as good as what I do, or I'm only as good or as valuable as how I look. And if that's my core belief.
That's a problem.
Yes. I'm going to have a lot of unhappy feelings, a lot of negative feelings. I'm going to have shame. I'm going to have disappointment in myself. I'm going to hate myself. And when you have all of that going on in your internal world, and then you're trying to manage your feeling state and be in relationship with another person that has that going on in their internal world, we've got a lot of volatility.
This could be a good show. We could do a whole show just on core beliefs.
Absolutely.
Would you like to do
mm-hmm.
that?
Oh, I think that would be great.
I find that fascinating because mm-hmm. I think some people may not understand because of the cultural beliefs imposing on personal beliefs, mm-hmm. and they think that's how to get ahead, move up the corporate ladder, how high is high.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people think that.
Right. Well, you know, a core belief that Americans have, it's the American dream that has gotten so convoluted. It's turned into, I can be whatever I believe I can be. I can be whatever I want to be. And I said to this group, I was teaching some of this on Saturday. I said, imagine if I just wanted to be an NFL football player. And I just believed it with all my heart. And I spent the next 10 years working on this dream that if I just believe it hard enough, I can be whatever I want to be. And I want to be the center of an NFL team. And then by the end of 10 years, which it obviously has not happened.
Right.
I mean, that's not even close to the truth.
Especially if you're 5'4".
Right.
And went to Notre Dame.
Right.
Oh, wait, it happened for that guy.
But
no.
But what you want to think about is then what happens after that? I've lost the whole program because now I failed at that.
And it hits your self-esteem and it affects your whole life.
Now I have another belief that I'm a loser, that I'm a failure because I didn't make it as an NFL football player. When the core belief of I can do anything I put my mind to, are you kidding me? I mean, really, people really believe this stuff. And the concept is different than what really is the truth behind that statement. Yes, I want people to have dreams. I want to say to them, hey, whatever that dream is, let's talk about that dream. But to say to somebody, you can be whatever you want to be, just believe it.
And then the motivation behind that I would be interested in is like, why do they want to be that? Is it ego?
Right.
Far from the truth?
Right, right.
Or is it some other reason?
Right, because if it's not even lining up with who you really are.
Exactly. Identity.
Yes.
Knuckles.
Yes.
Very nice.
Then we're way off. So now I've got a dream that doesn't even match who I am.
And that's the culture. Look,
mm-hmm.
the culture is pounding away
on
little kids.
What do you think American Idol is about? We have people that are trying out for American
TV
Idol
show.
That cannot sing to save their lives.
Yeah,
and
I've
nobody will tell them.
Why not? Who's the judges on that?
Well, but the time they get to the judging phase, what I'm
saying
is, where's the family and friends that are saying, hey, that's not your talent.
Yeah.
Let's find your talent. But instead, they're just thinking, I just can be this. And there's no shame.
No. That's amazing. And how about, okay, let's go on TV shows for 10 points. Well, I'll tell you what drives me nuts. And I think we missed a break, but we'll go to a break in about a minute.
Okay.
How about these reality shows? The Bachelor, The Bachelorette, where these women, like, and the guys, I mean, whoever it is, they interview
very
like 25 people, mm-hmm. and they're like, I can't
it's
even
very
talk about it. It's the nuttiest thing I've ever seen. That is not a reflection
of
reality.
It's exhibitionistic.
It's what?
Exhibitionistic.
Yeah, what is
that? We have all these
that?
People are, that are they're exhibitionists.
But that causes damage
it's
to what
very
people
damaging.
Think is
it's damaging
a relationship.
To everybody. It's damaging to the people on the show. It's damaging to the people that are doing the show. It's damaging to the people that watch the show. The plethora of dysfunction in what reality shows are, and I'm not saying every reality show. I don't want to ever, I'm not making a sweeping.
Yeah.
But many of
but
these.
Those.
Yes, but it's these people becoming stars based on dysfunction, which is.
But also,
very, very
I mean,
backwards.
Does it bother you? Like, you know, so the woman, she interviews, she's down to the last seven, you know, out of 30, and then she goes on a date and, like, you know, certain intimate mm-hmm. things, and then the next date, certain, I mean,
right, and everybody's
so
watching it.
It's like,
and she's doing it in front of everyone.
It's like, wait, you really want someone like that? It's like, you know, she said, well, I'll try these seven people out. I mean, that's the nuttiest thing I've ever heard mm-hmm. of. It doesn't make sense.
No, it's very destructive.
That's far from the truth.
Absolutely.
That is fantasy island.
It is pleasure-seeking behavior purely.
And
it
the
is,
sponsors love
I just want a good
it.
Feeling. I just want to have a good feeling. I don't want to base it in any substance. I don't want to base it in any history that I need to spend with a person to actually make the relationship work. So, I mean, we could go down the list. It's very damaging to
very
people.
Annoying. I got to tell you, I'm embracing that feeling. I feel better already. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with Cynthia Hyatt, star of Match No Match. We're talking about managing emotions. Very important. Great communication tools. More importantly, you'll have a healthier life. We'll be right back.
Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Match No Match, starring Cynthia Hyatt. We're talking about managing emotions. We were just going off on the movie, how it's really damaged, I believe, from a teaching standpoint or modeling standpoint, how relationships work. They don't work that way. They just don't work.
No. No,
it doesn't
they're
work.
Not going to work in the real world.
And then who looks like those people anyway? I mean, mm-hmm. all they have is like 30 models, whether they're men or women. Mm-hmm. And first of all, who would even go on those shows?
Well, and I think the thing that's so important that I'm telling clients all the time, every day, if it was about your external appearance that made the relationship work and made people happy, all those relationships would be working.
Yeah.
And none of them are.
And they're not.
No, none of them are.
And how about when people get older, maybe they don't look sort of like what they used to look like. Has anyone thought of that?
Well, they don't want to think that that's going to happen. They just want, it's all this focus on the external world. So if I look good and I have all the right material things and I've got money and then maybe I've got a little bit of celebrity status as well, then I'm going to be happy. And none of these people are happy.
You know, I always said on some of the seminars I've done for singles, people are they base it on short-term criteria, hoping for a long-term relationship. Mm-hmm. It's inconsistent.
Right.
It doesn't
that's
work.
That's right. It doesn't work. That's not how people are made.
No.
And that's not the way that humans do relationships.
And so Hollywood really may be doing a disservice for the young people. Yeah, a young crowd. But I guess it sells.
It's entertaining. It's very entertaining.
But and if you really believe it,
We've got exhibitionism happening and voyeurism.
That's right, at the same time.
Yes, and so two very dysfunctional behaviors. So we want to watch these train wrecks, okay? And we're going to look into these people's lives. And
then misery
we're gonna,
loves company.
Yes, and we're going to compare our lives to their lives.
Oh, amazing.
Yes, it is not good. It's not healthy.
Wow, not at all. So, okay, well, there's a case where you need to suspend the, you know, just take it for the entertainment value,
well, exactly.
Perhaps.
Exactly.
Maybe.
If it can be.
Yeah, I don't think it can be. I don't watch that stuff. It's too annoying.
Well, it's worse than, I mean, at least in my job, there's hope. And people that are coming in are admitting that they're having some dysfunction. We're working on it. But when I have to just watch it as a entertainment, and I know that the damage that is being done, it's very uncomfortable for me.
Yeah, I can imagine. And but see, that's what makes you so unique and special. Amazing. You are making a difference in the world.
Hopefully.
You
yes,
are.
I would like to believe that.
There's no question
that,
about
yes.
it. I think people just are learning tremendous tremendous ways of being, and that's going to be important.
Yes.
It's always important. So we talked about, so many things, thoughts
and
feelings.
Well, we have this whole entire pattern or grid chain of events that occurs when we talk about core beliefs lead to thoughts, thought leads to feelings, and feelings lead to actions. And so if I want to change an action, it's much more efficient if I change the core belief. Because
no
then
doubt.
By the time I get down to the action stage, I have a lot more control over it. But if I've got, you know, a lie as my core belief, and then I have thinking that is now substantiating the lie that I'm believing, then I'm going to have a lot of feelings that go with all that. They're going to certainly be negative. And that's a lot of emotional loading by the time I get to the action. It's extremely difficult to change an action at that point.
So do you think most people try to change behaviors without changing the beliefs?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what's happening?
Yes, and then they can't pull it off, and then they feel like a failure, and then eventually they just give up, and they go, well, I can't change anyways, which is a whole other core belief.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, we were talking about filters. Are there other filters that you know of? You talked about generalization.
Mm-hmm.
And
See, filters are made up of a lot of different things, and filters also are not a static issue. So my filtering process changes as I grow. It also can be a choice. You know, I can choose a lot of the filtering if I understand what I'm filtering it through. You know, prejudice is one of the things that is a filtering issue. My family of origin, the way that I have been taught to believe or perceive the world. Like maybe I've been taught to perceive the world as being an unforgiving place or a scary place. Or maybe I've been taught that financial security means everything. You know, these types of things. And so that's part of the way I'm going to filter what's happening, you know, as it's coming at me. And I'm going to filter a lot of what's going out of me through that as well.
So past events
mm-hmm.
Can mm-hmm. create certain beliefs about yourself and the world.
Right.
And so those filters are huge then.
And see, part of understanding my filtering is also can be my personality, my temperament. And so if I understand that I am a more sensitive person, like when we're dealing with highly sensitive people, the way that they perceive information or experience it may be a little bit different than somebody that isn't quite so sensitive. So that person needs to understand, okay, I'm a sensitive person. I need to take a step back and really make sure that I'm perceiving this correctly, because I may be receiving that statement much more deeply than that person intended for it to be.
That's very, very important. So what you're really saying is make sure you know yourself.
Right, exactly.
That's
always
the
comes
bottom
back,
line.
Always comes back to an internal job.
So the way out is in?
Yeah, that can be.
That may be one way to look at it.
Right.
But I agree with you totally. It's to really, really go internal, because it's really, I guess, two types of people. One, always looking outside themselves and wondering why external circumstances make up any internal problems they have versus maybe people looking internal and knowing that the storms of life will come at you, but can you build a bigger ship? Meaning, can you mm-hmm. really get to a place where you can really withstand the storms? Because the storms aren't going away, are they?
Right.
It's really how you're going to handle them.
And they may be getting bigger.
I think they are.
And so what's imperative is that we always remember it's an internal job. So the only things I really can control are me, and I don't even control all of me.
Yeah.
Like we just said, we can't choose our feelings. We can't, you know, I don't have any control over how I initially feel. I do have control over how I deal with my feeling, but I can't choose my feeling. If I could choose my feelings, I'd be happy all the time. And so what we want to think about is if I deal with my internal world and get my internal world in order, I'm going to manage the external world much better. If I try to change the external world so I feel good internally, I'm going to always be upset
right.
because it's not going to happen on a consistent basis, and it's going to be really exhausting because the world is not going to cooperate with me very well.
Not at all. In fact, maybe that's why the world's the world is mm-hmm. to get people to realize, hello, it's time to go internal, and if mm-hmm. not, I'm going to throw you more hurricanes,
well, it goes
tornadoes.
Back, it goes back to the one we talked about last month when we said the reality of who you are, and the first letter in R, the A, you know, that adjective.
A.
Is it adjective?
R,
the reality of who you are.
Pronoun?
Yes. I don't know. Anyways.
I made it up. I heard it once in third grade.
It's A-R-A-R-E. And so acceptance. Acceptance is the first thing I have to practice with myself and the world around me, is I have to accept. Then, as soon as I accept, then I can figure out what I actually can change.
Like Nelson Mandela.
Right.
I mean, I thought of him the other day. It's like, I don't even know why he went to prison, but it was obviously unfair. But 27 years, and this guy must have process the way you describe mm-hmm. to come out so healthy, to come out and make a difference.
That's right.
That is
remarkable. The main thing about it was forgiveness. Could he forgive these people to put him in prison?
Amazing.
Mm-hmm. And so acceptance is a lot about forgiving myself and forgiving the world around me, and then figuring out what can I really change.
It sounds like someone else who said, forgive them for they not know who what
they know
doing.
Not what they do.
Yeah.
That would be Jesus.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're impressed.
Yes.
Yes. Tom's laughing.
He said, forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do.
That is a profound statement.
Yes, it is.
Because one of maybe his best teachings. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, a lot of good teachings.
Yes.
I'm not
yes.
discounting
yes.
the rest. But
yes.
but this was a really good one because it talks about forgiveness. And it talks about probably seeing something no one can see.
Well, the most profound part of that statement is the revelation that Jesus knows us. And so he knows us deep to our core. That's God.
Oh,
God knows us. And so Jesus is saying to the Father, I know these people. They don't even know themselves, but I know them. Please forgive them. They really don't know what they're doing.
Wow. That's a nice way to look at life.
Yes.
Or anything. And because a lot of people really don't know what they're doing.
Right. And see, the important part here, though, is when we look at forgiveness at that level, you know, Jesus, God, can forgive and forget. They can forgive at that level. We need to forgive, but forgiveness does not mean it makes it okay. Jesus, God, the Holy Spirit, never said it's okay. When Jesus was forgiving this, when he's saying, Father, please forgive these people, he's saying, they don't know what they're doing, and I want to help them change. And so I need time to help them change. And so that's part of the forgiveness process, is that Jesus accepted everybody exactly the way that they were, not to leave them that way. But I have to start with acceptance first before I can do any change.
So maybe the example of an abusive relationship, you could forgive, but you don't have to live with the person.
That's right.
Get yourself in a safe place.
That's right. If I'm in an abusive relationship, I need to accept that, wow, I can't be in denial anymore. I need to accept the truth. And the truth is, this is abusive. Now, what part of it can I change? Only me. So probably what I need to change is whether or not I'm willing to stay being abused. So I can forgive that person. And one of the ways I stay forgiving them is not to continue to put myself in the position to have to forgive them all the time.
And is it the fear of leaving that causes people to stay?
That's a very complicated issue as to why people leave abusive relationships.
Yeah, yes. But that is very interesting.
Yes.
That's probably a good show, too. So getting back to these filters, a couple I noticed here I thought was really interesting, expectations and perceptions. And certainly expectations about something sets a standard in which to make an evaluation of something.
Mm-hmm.
So I would think you can change expectations.
Yes. And this is another very important concept, because many times people say, well, I have no expectation. And I'll say to a client,
yeah, I don't believe that
at
all.
Of course, I say, you expected me to be here today, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, yeah, you didn't like show up going, well, I don't know if she's going to be here or not. You expected me to be here. If I wasn't there, you would have gone, and you would have been disappointed.
Yeah.
So we want to work on having appropriate expectations. So many times my expectations are very inappropriate or very immature.
What would be an appropriate expectation? Just basic human kindness and that type of stuff?
I'm not sure if that's even appropriate expectation globally. I think in my close relationships, the more intimacy I have with somebody, the higher my expectations of them are.
Really?
Absolutely, because the closer I get to them, the safer they need to be, or it gets more dangerous. See, the farther away I am intimacy-wise from somebody, the lower my expectations can be. So if they're an idiot, okay, I can accept that, right? They act like a moron one day. Okay. But see, if it's my husband, right, and I have a very close, intimate relationship with him, then my expectation is that he is going to be...
Loyal.
Yes, loyal,
faithful,
kind, gentle, godly, all these things. And so my expectations are going to be higher the deeper my intimacy is.
That makes sense, doesn't it?
Yes, because otherwise I can't be intimate with unsafe people. And so you get that, remember they talk about that ripple effect? And you want, you know, the closest people on ripple number 1, 2, and 3. Well, we would like to think it's our best friends, our family, our spouses. Many times those people need to be on ripple 99.
Yeah.
You know, because they're not safe enough to be that close to me.
That makes a lot of sense. So expectation is a filter. That's important to examine that. Look at it and really reevaluate it, because that can lead to disappointment or happiness.
Well, let me make also a comment about this whole idea about expectation. Because certainly the deeper my intimacy, the higher my expectation. But the deeper my intimacy, the higher my acceptance is as well. So we have to remember that I'm not having expectations that I'm setting somebody up to fail and I'm judging them. It means that I have more acceptance when they fail, because that's part of what we need in deep intimacy. But I'm also having higher expectations of them in order to keep that relationship safe.
Gotcha.
So my expectation is not that they're perfect, but that they're trustworthy. Because trustworthy people are going to hurt me. There's no way around me hurting people I love. But the trustworthy issue of me being in relationship with me is that I care if I hurt somebody. I'm going to do everything I can to fix it. They also can trust that I'm working on self-development so that I do less of it. So they can know that, wow, she's really working on that. So it's not like, this is like, well, this is the way I am, so just accept it. I mean, that is not a safe person.
I've heard that. In fact, back in the 70s, there was a whole phase going on, like, hey, if you don't like it, too bad. I thought,
very
that's
irresponsible.
A really weird thing, you know.
Well, it's very egocentric.
Yeah, it is. And
yeah, it's very selfish.
I never liked it when people... But
it's a toddler.
Yeah, yeah. I should have known that word. Back then, I could have called me little toddler you. But I didn't. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with Cynthia Hyatt, star of Match, No Match. We're talking about managing emotions, a very important skill, but really a way of life, I think, that people should really learn and learn today so you can have a happier life. We'll be right back.
At Birum Baum & Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birnbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Match No Match, starring Cynthia Hyatt, and talking about no match. There's no match for this young lady, Cynthia Hyatt. She is amazing. Am I right, Tom?
Oh, my gosh.
I'm not kidding you. This is good stuff. What did you say? The Dream?
The Dream Giver. That's the book I'm reading right now. It's excellent about who you are, your identity, and being who you are.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who wrote it?
Dave Wilkerson.
The Dream Giver. I love that.
Yes.
So it's really about making sure you fulfill your destiny.
The dream, yes.
Your dream.
Your destiny, your fate, who God made you to be, why you're here, you know.
Huge.
Yes, yes. A
I mean, what's bigger than that, right?
Exactly.
I don't think there
exactly.
is. Exactly.
And how many people are not fulfilling their destiny and their what God has ordained and from the beginning of time for them to do?
Someone told me, how much are people paying you or your employer, current employer, paying you not to fulfill your dreams?
Well, I like that. That's a good way to say that. Yes.
It's sort of like, oh, my gosh.
I hope you're being paid enough.
Oh, yeah, and even then, it's not enough.
No, it isn't. It won't ever be enough.
That's incredible. I'm going to get that book, The Dream Giver,
mm-hmm.
probably on Amazon or
mm-hmm.
something.
And it's a short book. It's a really neat little metaphor, allegory, whatever, in the beginning.
Oh,
it's a
nice.
Story about a guy named Ordinary that lived in the land of Familiar.
Oh, how
yeah,
interesting.
It's really neat.
Clever.
Yeah, very clever.
But
yes.
relates
yes.
nicely to
yes.
people. I'm going to get that book today. That's good. Now, let's talk about
control.
Control. Controlling
yes.
what we can control, what
right.
we can't control, what can we control?
Yes, exactly. So when we talk about this whole way that we get down to actions, the way that feelings are produced by thoughts and thoughts are produced by beliefs and beliefs are affected by our filter and our filters, you know, we filter situations and events through that filter. And so what we want to think about is, first of all, you know, part of a feeling happening in me is generally going to be started by an external situation or event. So I have to say to myself, well, can I control that? No.
No.
Sometimes I can control some. I mean, I controlled coming here
yeah.
as best as I could.
But you love it.
I do. I chose to be here. So
yes,
that
true.
So that event, I have some modicum of control over.
But some of the traffic.
Right, I don't.
Maybe you
that's
can.
Not, that's exactly right.
But then you can control maybe looking at the traffic reports beforehand.
That's right.
But
right.
if it's all traffic and
right.
you're, there's no way you can
that's
get
right.
here.
Right, exactly. So the reason that we're talking and you, that thinking process is part of how I not be a victim to my circumstances or a victim to my own feelings or a victim to my own mind or a victim of my own life.
Nice.
Yes. So that. I make sure that I say, what can I control and then what can I change?
So events, typically not.
Right.
Situations, external we're so, talking
yeah, external
about.
Situations, you know, some of those I can control. I can choose to create an event or a situation, but whether or not it's going to actually happen.
Like in
I'm
New
not sure.
Orleans,
mm-hmm.
you can't control the hurricane.
That's right.
As far as we know.
That's right.
But you can control whether you leave
That's
the
right.
area
That's right.
where a lot of people,
That's right.
well, sadly, I mean,
That's
I'm
right.
not saying that was good or bad.
That's
Maybe
exactly
they
right.
didn't have the funds or the resources.
Possibly.
And then that's
but
sad, too.
For the majority of people, we would like them to make good choices.
Yeah.
We would like them we would like them to understand, okay, we can't control a storm, but I can control, as best as I can, what I do about the storm.
Yeah.
What are my choices in that storm? Whether it be a real storm in life or an emotional storm or a
nice
financial
example,
storm.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
You can, and then, like, the Army Corps of Engineers could have controlled fixing it way before.
Right.
What was up with that?
Right.
Oh, that's a whole different show.
Right.
That was controllable.
Right, right.
If there was a storm.
That's right.
But the odds are there's going to be storms.
That's right. And so this is where it's important to say, okay, an event or situation, some of it I can control and some of it I can't. I have to accept. Now, my filtering, can I control the way I filter things? Some, you know. What I can control is if I'm prejudiced, I can lose that.
Definitely.
I can stop being prejudiced. I can stop being judgmental. I can stop being legalistic. So I can choose that. Now, I may not have chosen to become a prejudiced person. I might have been raised in a home that was extremely prejudiced, and I learned it and didn't realize I had it.
But once you can learn that, you realize you have it.
That's right. Then I have control over it, whether or not I stay that way.
So
part of the filter, if it's my personality, well, I can't control that. I am born with a personality. What I can control is how I manage that personality, how I manage my temperament. If I'm a highly sensitive person, like I gave you that example, well, if I know that about me, I accept that about me. Now I'm going to take responsibility for it and put effort into it. And I'm going to change the way I filter things if I understand I'm highly sensitive.
It totally makes sense because the filters taints everything to conform with how you believe in the world.
Right.
And then
that's
it comes
right.
out in the big picture
right.
to reflect back to you. And you think that it's the truth, but it's really your filters reflecting
right.
back your innermost thoughts and feelings.
Exactly.
Wow. So life experiences. Okay. So you can also control perceptions.
Mm-hmm. And some of controlling a perception is simply saying to myself, I have to give myself, you know, the opportunity to think I may be misperceiving this, so I need to check it out. Before I make a judgment, before I, like, have it go all through the core beliefs and the thoughts and I'm having a feeling of offense, I might say to myself, you know, I need to, like, wait a little bit and I need to maybe check this out because I don't know this person well enough to know if that's really how they intended it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, perceptions are interesting because, I mean, well, let me ask you this. Are there tools to be able to intentionally change a perception?
Absolutely.
What are some of the tools
that
you recommend?
Well, we talked about it earlier. When Jesus said, Father, forgive them for they know not what they do. That's a way to control the way he's perceiving those people.
So look at it from a different perspective.
So one of the ways that I can change a perspective on somebody is I get back to the truth. Well, what would God think about this person?
Yeah.
How would Jesus view this person?
Yeah. So you change your, what I would call perceptual position.
Yes.
The first position is, let's say, yourself. Mm-hmm. The second position may be how someone else would think. Third may be an observer.
Yeah, being an objective observer. If I say, you know, I'm perceiving this through the filter of a woman. What would a man think about this situation?
Nicely done. This is good tools.
Yes.
And it's informational.
Mm-hmm.
So with more information, more different perceptions, it might just make all the difference. But so many people, they get stuck in their first position.
Right. And
it's
then
all about
and then
them.
It's all about reaction.
Ugh.
It's all about reaction.
Doesn't work well, does
no,
it?
No, it does not.
Really?
It's very tiring.
Anything. Yeah, very tiring. So expectations. So a lot of these things you have control over. Perceptions, expectations. Personality, you said not really. You can manage it, though.
Right. I can use my personality for me or against me. So we certainly can control emotional maturity.
How do you
do
that?
So if I'm an immature person, I can grow up.
And how do you grow up?
Well, that's a choice.
Really?
Yes.
So you make a decision that, hey, this isn't working
up to
that
I might be a little egocentric and, I'm making the world all about me. And, I'm getting highly offended and easily resentful and taking everything personally. And so maybe I need to have a bigger global picture. That there are a lot of realities, a lot of different worlds happening other than just mine.
So from self-centeredness to some other position.
Right.
Nicely done. Now, the beliefs, then, we could get into.
Now, these are hard. We can't necessarily control them initially because core beliefs are usually given to us very early on. We get them growing up. And we also get them from our parents.
Yeah.
The way that they perceive the world.
So
and the way that they believe about themselves and the way they believe, we get those beliefs from them. And so unearthing core beliefs is difficult. And one of the ways that we find out what is my core belief is I trace it back. So if I say, you know, I've got this destructive behavior of overeating or emotional eating. Okay, so what are the feelings that lead to that? Well, I'm upset, I'm hurt, I'm lonely, I'm scared, I'm sad, I'm angry. Okay, so what are the thoughts that were before that? Well, my thought was, my husband is letting me down. He doesn't really love me, doesn't understand me, and doesn't care. Okay, so wow, there's all those thoughts. So what came from that? Wow, I wonder if I have a core belief that as soon as men get married, they stop caring for their wives.
Oh, not a good one.
No, but maybe that's what she grew up with. Maybe that's how her mother felt. That as soon as he marries me, now he doesn't care anymore. He got what he wanted, now he's done. And so I can go, wow, that's a core belief. Well, I have to then come out of agreement from a core belief. I need to stop agreeing with that.
Right.
I need to consciously move it to the conscious mind and say, I'm not going to believe that way.
Do you replace it with a more empowering belief?
Absolutely. And that would be a truth.
Okay,
what's one of the truths that I want to put into that? Does that line up with what God would say? Does that line up with what the Bible says?
And as you trace these back, I like this method you're doing, and then it can automatically start changing other filtering
processes. That's right.
Perceptions, expectations. It might solve the maturity issue.
That's right.
Personality, well,
right. Life experiences, I can heal from life experiences.
Wow,
yes.
This is a nice process.
Then, by the time I get to the event or situation, it might not matter that much.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So you start from...
The action. What's my action telling me?
Which is another way of saying your behavior,
mm-hmm.
perhaps.
Right.
And you just trace it up. That
right.
is nice.
And so you can do it both positively and negatively. So if my action is, I want to come to this radio station and do this show, well, what are the feelings I have? Well, the feelings are a lot about meaning and purpose, and I think it's a positive feeling for me. It's energizing for me. Well, what are the thoughts about that? Well, the thoughts are, wow, how many people could this help? I like to really help people. Well, what's the core belief? Maybe the core belief is, I believe this is what God has called me to do. And so I trace that all the way back. Then that changes my filter. And then whatever situation that happens as I try to get here is going to be perceived very differently.
That makes sense. So you can do it on what's perceived in a negative and a positive.
And a positive,
and
yes.
Well, let me ask you this. Would it be worthwhile, or is it overload, to just start picking mm-hmm. up negative and positive and just start practicing this tracing
yes,
process?
It's very helpful because then it tells me a lot about my internal world that maybe has otherwise been unavailable to me.
Wow. And you use this in therapy?
Absolutely.
And what's some of the results you see that happen?
Oh, it's very helpful. And this one, I like to say, the person that this is based from, I added some things to it, but the guy that I got it from is called Dr. McGee, and the book is called Search for Significance.
Oh.
It's a very old book, but it's probably one of the best books I have read about cognitive restructuring and the way that we think and making sure that the way that we think is as healthy as possible, because that's really the only thing we really can control all the time.
So here's a tool that you can control.
That's right.
And it's
my
pretty
thinking,
easy, isn't it?
My thinking, I'm constantly saying to clients, you need to be disciplined in your mind. Your mind is the thing that you can control. If you hear a thought in your head, you need to be aware of what you're thinking. And many times I will say to people, do you want to challenge that thought? I mean, many people just believe whatever they think.
Yeah, I know.
And
it's
so
scary.
It is. And so it's imperative to be looking at my thinking because that's the thing I really can change. That's the thing I have control over.
And what's reinforcing some of these ineffective thinking, maybe
right.
TV?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And how about environment? How big is environment to this whole situation? So, for example, if you're in an environment where, like misery loves company type of scenario, where they promote this mm-hmm. unhealthy way of looking at the world, you can, I suspect, control where you want to be in your environment.
Sometimes we can control our environment, you know, but many times we don't have control over that environment. I mean,
not over the environment, but whether you want
right.
to be there or not.
Well, and sometimes we can't leave.
No?
You know, sometimes, what if you don't have enough money to move out of
okay.
the house? You know, so maybe I can't leave the neighborhood that I want. You know, so I do need to learn how to live within the environment I'm in. If I can change the environment and that would be healthier for me, then by all means, I think we need to set up as much health around us as we possibly can.
So that's big,
mm-hmm.
who you surround yourself
Absolutely.
With. Absolutely. So physically, you might live someplace and you may not like the environment, but you can always go outside that environment, mm-hmm. certain clubs, certain organizations.
Right. Well, the whole thing is, you know, we have the book by Viktor Frankl.
Man's Search for Meaning.
And his big thing that he came up with was the only thing really I can control is inside of me. It's my mind, in my head, the way that I think about where I'm at. And he survived it and went on to thrive and did life-changing things because of it.
And he was in a situation, for those who may not have read the book, it was...
he was a Holocaust survivor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
unbelievable.
It's hard to imagine how someone could have been in that much control of his thinking under those circumstances.
That's right.
That's why he survived.
That's
he
right.
says it in the book.
And he also had a truth.
Yeah.
He had a relationship with the truth giver.
He absolutely.
And that gave him the paradigm. That gave him the plumb line, the reference point, always to get his thinking back to where it needed to be.
And that he needed to survive to write about this so it never happened again.
Yes.
It said it in the book.
Yes,
I'm getting the chills thinking about it.
I know, me too.
Great book, right?
Yes, it is. Oh, life-changing.
Oh, phenomenal. Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl. Mm-hmm. Definitely a book you want to look at. And if you think you don't have control or your life is bad.
Right.
Just step into what he had to go through.
Yes.
I don't know how much many things are worse than
that.
It
gives you great perspective and helps my filter tremendously when I think about him.
And that's
Mandela.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, some amazing people out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a way of changing perceptions. We just demonstrated another way. Pick up a book and start
education.
Reading what other people have gone through.
Absolutely.
Phenomenal. So, Cynthia, can you believe the show has flown by? It just
seems
like we started like 5 minutes ago.
I know.
This always happens.
I know.
What's up with that? I don't know.
Good.
It's amazing. So, how do people get in touch with you and all that?
Yes. My website is cynthiahyatt.com, and my name is spelled C-I-N-T-H-I-A. And my last name is spelled Hyatt, H-I-E-T-T.
Not like the hotel.
Not like it's spelled how it sounds, Hyatt.
Yeah, hi.
Yes. It. That's right. And then Cynthia is different spelling because it's with an I instead of a Y.
That's a great spelling, though.
Oh, thank you.
I like it. So CynthiaHyatt.com, and you can have blogs going on and a lot of great information.
Yes, some new things are happening, so that's good.
Wow,
this
is so cool. So remember, manage emotions.
Managing your emotions.
That's very important. Yes. It will help in every aspect of life. I'm convinced of it, because life is just a collection of things that happen to you. And the key is to manage your emotions so you can be more effective.
And be more your authentic, the authentic you.
That's what we talked about actually
a month ago. That's
right. That's right.
That's right.
Anyway, thank you, Cynthia.
Thank
you so much. See you next month, 2 to 4. This is Breakthrough Thinking. And, of course, Match No Match, starring Cynthia Hyatt, every third Monday from 2 to 4. Have a great week. We'll be on again tomorrow, actually. I can't remember who's on tomorrow. Who's on tomorrow? Oh, Barbara Haggerty, Mind Your Own Business. That's right. Wednesday and Friday we'll be at Arizona State Fair. Everyone have a great week. See you tomorrow.